We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Powered by Learfield. This is the Bobcat Insider, your exclusive look at Montana State Athletics. Now, here's the voice of the Bobcats, Jay Sanderson.
Well, thanks for checking us out. In case you've not heard, or if you're new to the podcast, the Bobcat Insider is now available on the Apple iTunes Store. You can also get us on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. It's all totally free. All you need to do is search for the Bobcat Insider podcast, set it up to subscribe, and it will instantly download to your device. Today, with the NBA Finals wrapping up, we're talking basketball. Joining us is Montana State men's head coach Brian Fish. You can follow the basketball program on Twitter at MSU Bobcats MBB. And coach, just kind of in a general sense, how's the offseason been for you?
Well, it's gotten a lot better in the last week. You know, it's one thing that's really changed. I've noticed in the last couple of years, Jay, I'm not sure we're shrinking our off season more and more. There's really just no time to get away. As I jokingly talked to my other coaching friends, you're daily battling for your program to make sure someone's not trying to take a player, some player's not doing this or that or something. So it there's never a day you just can take a day and just go, whew, everything's good. And but that is what it is. I love what we do. We love what we do, and we're excited to get the guys back next Friday.
And you kind of alluded to it, but it's been an offseason unlike any other around here. The question everybody asks has to do with Tyler Hall. After his junior season wrapped up in March, he declared for the NBA draft, went through the whole evaluation process, then withdrew from the draft and will return for his senior season. For you as a coach watching all of this play out, what has that been like for you?
Well, this is something his dad, Henry, and I sat down and started talking about last August, because there had to be a plan in place for this to take place. You know, I think there was approximately 250 plus kids that declared for the draft, and there's kids that declare for the draft for attention. There's kids that declared for the draft because They know they're in, and there's people that declare for the draft to get information to see if they're in. And so you got a wide range of situations there. And so when we, Henry and I, sat down and started talking about this, you know, there had to be a plan in place of taking his classes online because he had to go train and do some things to take, you know, to make sure he had his options, because, you know, former boss of mine, Coach Allman's favorite saying is, make sure you always have options. And we wanted to make sure he had options. His parents, Laura and Henry, are on top of things, and wanted to make sure, you know, Laura handled the academics and Henry made sure we were not breaking any rules financially or anything like that. And Tyler was allowed to just kind of, you know, do homework and focus on basketball. So it was a huge plan that was put in place, and it was followed. And, you know, the number one thing that I was grateful, or two things I'd say I was grateful for. First was they felt confident enough and relaxed enough, and we have a good enough friendship. They asked me to be involved, which was incredibly humbling to be involved in that. And then the second thing was, you know, how many kids this day and age say and do what they say? You know, I mean, Tyler and his family said, this is what we want to do. If we get a guarantee of a first or second round pick, we're going pro. If we don't, we're going to come back and try to have the best year ever and gain as much knowledge as we can and re-go at it next year. And it was to a T. They did exactly what they said, but there was a lot of things we learned along the way.
I know, I remember back in late April when we went on the Bobcat Club East Montana swing, a lot of people would come up to you and talk to you about, well, how's Tyler doing? What's he learning? And during the process, you were not permitted to speak about it. The NBA prohibits that from happening. But now that it's over, I know you can open up a little more about what went on. So what did Tyler learn about himself, his game, and the NBA while going through all of this?
Well, I think to best understand this, you have to remove yourself from being a Bobcat fan. Because if you're a fan, you wanted him to come back. And, you know, I personally, our staff, we're teachers and educators. And in our situation, we are to put our people in the best position to make a living. You know, and sometimes I get a little bothered because if, you know, if someone leaves and leaves early and takes something that, at, you know, Microsoft or with Yahoo or something like that, it's celebrated that, you know, this guy's leaving to take a career and go to the next challenge. But sometimes when an athlete has a chance to jump at it, it's looked down upon. And that's a little bit of frustration. My job is to put the 13 guys that are on scholarship in the best position to take care of their families when they leave our program. And, you know, I don't know what you make in the radio business, but if opening rounds salary in the NBA is pretty good salary, and I think you could take care of yourself. And you know, we tried to do that, and we tried to put him in the best situation and give some information. So if you remove yourself as a Bobcat fan, you say, okay, here's a young man that's got a chance to make $1.5 million a year minimum for starting out, or he can come back and maybe, you know, knock some of these records, maybe take our team to a level, be around his teammates, enjoy Bozeman because he truly loves being at MSU and things like that. And you got to kind of weigh those things. So I think sometimes the NBA puts you on a little bit of restriction what you can say, because I was in a tough position because whatever I said could be looked at selfishly either way. And I tried to stay in an advisory role. And, you know, I had constant communication with the family, with Tyler, and tried to do that. And sometimes I'd hang up the phone and go, gosh, did I lean? Cause all I was trying to do was be a friend. And, ultimately, when I look back on it personally, I thought I helped in my role, give them the best advice that I could, that didn't slant his opinion either way, that he was able to make a quality, judgment, a quality decision based on the information he got.
And it was really a win-win for Tyler, because if he goes and finds out he's a first or second round projected guy, he goes and becomes a pro.
Yes.
If he's not, he gets evaluated by the NBA scouts and learns what he needs to do with his game to get himself to that level.
Right.
So now that he's back, What were some of the things that the evaluators told him that he should work on in the upcoming season?
Well, first of all, I'd go down this road. A lot of guys, when they declare for the draft, I think they do it for their Instagram page or their Twitter account to say, hey, nothing happens. Tyler was invited for 4 workouts. Teams, they've changed these rules, and it's so much better for these kids now because they can truly go. Literally 3-4 years ago, they had to pay their own way to go. They had to pay their own hotel. Who can do that? Now within parameters, they can do things. And he ended up taking the Atlanta Hawks workout. He ended up taking the Boston Celtics workout. He had another workout with Milwaukee and Oklahoma City Thunder that just didn't fit in the plans of what we had designed, of what we thought was the best way to make sure he came off looking as good as he could. And but he had 4 teams consistently trying to get him in and get his workouts. But he went to 2. I did fly out to Boston and got to hang with him. You're not allowed to go in and watch him, but you're allowed to talk and hear and just kind of be a fly on the wall as this process is going on. I think a couple things that Tyler said to me that really jumped out at me. First of all, he said, when you get in those workouts and you put the Celtics jersey on or the Hawks jersey on, it does not matter anymore where you played. It is. And he truly felt like that, if he worked out with a guy from a big school or a Power 5 school compared to him, that was no longer a factor. If you can play, you can play. It doesn't matter if you're a Bobcat or a Hoosier, you can play. And so that jumped out. And then the second thing that I think really, really woke him or opened his eyes was the commitment that those guys make to playing. And that was privately the most eye-opening, refreshing, and feel-good moments for me was this young man has totally changed his body. He's committed to eating different. He's committed to working out. I mean, he texted me yesterday. He had already gotten 2 workouts in, and he was going to go work on quickness and quickness drills. And I think that was the number one thing that came back from the feedback is he needs to have his first step a little quicker because, as we all know as fans and as coaches, if he gets that shot off, the chances of it's going in is tremendously in our favor. And, you're playing – you kind of grasp this a little bit, but there's 350 guys in the NBA, and there's 350 best players in the world. It's a global sport. So to think that you could possibly have a chance to be one of those guys to play, and there's these things that you need to work on, it can go either motivate you or you can just go, well, it ain't going to happen. Well, Tyler's probably taking it to extreme the other way, and that's what I've been very happy with.
And a lot of the talk about this, certainly and understandably, has been specifically about Tyler, but I'm curious how the entire program, coaches, teammates, everyone in Tyler's sphere, can gain from what he learned during this process.
Well, our team was not very happy the month of April with how the season went. And that's an understatement to everyone was frustrated. And sometimes you get in a situation where it doesn't go well late and you want to get it over because it's just hurting you so bad. And then you want to immediately go back to work to change it. Our players are motivated. They've got a group chat going on. Even when Tyler was working out, he was talking to our recruits through Skype and stuff when they were on their visits, and stuff. Or the guys were constantly talking. So we've had an extremely close group of guys that have tried to go to work, and we've got guys are in doing boot camps right now, trying to make sure they're in shape. Harry's playing and getting great experience playing for the Norway national team and stuff. So we have some guys really that have, you know, the old term we used to be, you're a little bit better player, a little bit better employee when you have a little bit of fear in you that things may not work out. And I think we've rediscovered that. And I'm anxious to get these guys back because we're certainly going to attack this a little differently than we did last year.
You graduated a large class. Zach Green, Joe Vazzolo, Connor Fry, Benson Oseande all move on. Devontae Klein's also left school to pursue professional opportunities overseas. You've restocked the program now as we look forward to the upcoming season with some new players. Let's start with the local kid, Layden Ricketts. He's a 6'5 forward from Livingston, Montana, shot 40% from three at Sheridan JUCO in Wyoming, about 12 points per game there. What are you adding to the program when he gets to town?
Well, first of all, as I told him in the recruiting process, if he would have been from Las Vegas, we would have went after him. And it just so happens he's a Montana kid that has gone to a junior college and taken his game up a notch. And he does shoot. He shoots at an extremely high clip, and he's got his best shot preparation that I have seen in a long time before the ball arrives to him. And but he's also an extremely good passer, talks a lot on defense, competes. He loves the game of basketball. He does shoot it, but you offend him if you call him a shooter because he wants to be more than that. But, you know, the one big stat that wasn't talked about other than you and I privately, wasn't probably as talked about as much during games and stuff, was we were down 73s for the season. And you start playing 32, 33 games, that's two threes a game made. And you look at our season and you recap, and obviously have watched every game two or three times now since the season's been over. But the way the defense has slid and the way we had open shots, we needed to improve our shooting ability tremendously. And he does that, but that's not his only. He's not a one-trick pony. But also to have a young man that's, you know, from the state of Montana, but also from the community here. His mom was an employee at the university for a couple years, and his dad's a big fan and stuff like that. And they came to games even before he become a player. Is really exciting because we've kind of waited for this to get a young man. You know, Danny Robinson was the last guy here from that was on scholarship from the state of Montana. And, you know, again, one of the reevaluations that you do, and we do this whether we have a great year or a bad year, you evaluate things. And I just thought one of the things that we needed was someone in that locker room touting and toting and with pride about being a Bobcat because they grew up watching Bobcat basketball, and Layden brings that, and I'm excited to have that back in the locker room, and I'm excited to have him. I think he's going to be a really, really important piece of the puzzle for us.
You know, a lot of times when a transfer joins a team, the fans will look only at the stats and not necessarily how they fit into the system. I think this is particularly appropriate when you talk about Russell Daniels, a 5'11 guard who comes from southwestern Florida, JUCO. He's not a big scorer, but he could well end up being a very significant piece of the puzzle. So what's your vision for how he'll contribute?
Well, first of all, their JUCO team might have won the Big Sky. That's, I mean, I think eight of them went mid-major or higher, maybe nine went mid-major or higher this year after the season. I mean, they were consensus number one team all season long. They went to Hutch. They beat Hutch on their home floor and then got upset the next game. When you're one and done, it can happen at any time, as we, you know, as Kentucky did a few years ago that I thought's the best team I've ever seen. They get upset by Wisconsin. They don't win it, but that still don't mean they're not a great team. Well, Russell was the engine of that team. And there's a couple things that excite me about Russell. Russell's like the quarterback in football. You don't judge them by stats. You judge them by wins. They won 33 odd games this year. The minutes aren't what somebody else played because no one played those minutes. They had 8-9 guys. They ran groups in there and stuff like that. But what you look at when you're recruiting that young man is who's on the floor when it's money time. And Russell was out there all the time. He guarded the best player. The ball pops out of his hands. He's extremely competitive. I'm really excited now. We have three ball handlers in the program with Harry and Russell and Lassie. I think he gives us the option to move. What I've been trying to do and I'm excited about is I want to get Harry off the ball a little bit, because ultimately I think Harry, when you peel back the skin, is truly a combo guard and not a point guard. Well, Russell's a point guard. And so I'm excited for some of the combinations we can put on. Russell's a guy that's, led the team, was locker room captain and did those things. And just something I thought we needed to lead and need to find. I thought we needed some more voices in the locker room that get us headed in the right direction. And certainly I think he brings that to the team. And I'm excited for him to get here next Thursday, I can tell you that.
And then the other player you signed during the spring period was another freshman, Max Schuker, a 6'9 center from Austria. Played the last three seasons in the Austrian Pro League on an amateur exemption. What really caught your eye when you got a look at him?
Well, this was the plan all along, was to add some size with a young man, a freshman. And I think if you Max was widely considered one of the 60 best players overseas and things like that, and was being heavily recruited by Missouri Valley teams and some teams that way. We have a friend, and I have a good friend that was recruiting him at Purdue, and they decided they weren't going to go on him, and they called us and said, hey, this kid can, and is good, tough. And I just thought, again, one of the weaknesses that we had last year was we had to go double the post too many times because of, some lack of size and stuff like that. Not lack of fight. I thought Sam and Connor fought their tails off, but at the end of the day, they're 6'5". And to add a 6'9 kid that's played in pro leagues, they're a little more physical, a little more active type leagues. And he stood in there and he played 12 minutes a game on that pro team. And to end up ultimately coming down to, we had to fight them harder than anybody to get him to come here, because they wanted to sign him and get him to officially turn pro and stuff like that. And he wanted to come here and get better. He's also due in next weekend. So I'm excited about him. We got a couple NCAA things that we got to clear up, as you do with foreign kids, but excited about him, excited about the toughness he brings and just what he can do on the floor and think he can help us.
And then we haven't really talked much at all about the kid you signed in November in the early period, because we're getting ready for the season at that time, and that becomes the focus. So I want to ask you quickly about Quentin Guilford, 6'5 wing from Peoria, Arizona, led his team to the state semifinals down there in Arizona, 48% shooter from the field. Pretty good numbers. What are your expectations for him?
Well, he spent most of the year, I think 10 or 12 games, he rolled his ankle and had a severely sprained ankle. And I think there was a lot of people that thought he could be a contention for player of the year in the state down there because of his ability. He's a, and I hope this comes off the right way, he's a young looking puppy on the floor. I think his best basketball when he gets here may be 18 to 24 months away, but that don't mean he can't help us right away. I just think there's tremendous growth. We had a friend call us that he worked out with last week and was like, you stole one. And I think he's a young man that's long rangy, young man that can play and do some things that we would be lacking if we didn't have him. I'm excited about getting him here. I think he's a guy that's going to have to, live a little bit this summer heavier than the other guys with our nutritionist and our strength coach, because his body is just going to explode on us. And if the quicker he attacks with the nutritionist and with Wilcox in the weight room, I think you're going to see some incredible growth increments in him, because, man, you're talking about if you were to build a player, that's how you'd build it. Now God gave him the body. Now he's got to refine it and develop it, and he's going to be really good.
Jared Martin, another Arizona kid. He's from Scottsdale down in the Phoenix area. Another 6'5 wing who earned a reputation in high school as a shooter and a scorer. 21-8, but he also had nearly 5 assists and 2 blocks a game in high school. Sounds like he can do quite a bit.
Well, he was a young man we were not recruiting. We were sitting in the first weekend last year in L.A., and we were watching the powerhouse team play, and I'm just watching, and there's a kid all over the floor making all the plays, demanding his players to play at a level. You know, they had a couple games where they won. They had one game where they got beat, and his intensity and things like that. So when you talk shooter, you talk passer, you talk that, I think that takes a back seat to his competitiveness and his leadership. He's a hard-nosed, you know, I'll challenge you type player that I think was desperately needed to add to the program. And he's confident. He's went and played for a prolific prep, and you know, they were the top 10 team, top five team in the country, and did that last year. And you know, so he challenged himself. We were able to get it done early with him. I'm extremely excited about getting him here because I think he's going to factor in right away. You know, he's 205 pounds as, you know, he's as a freshman. His body is extremely mature, extremely ready to go. And so we're excited to get him and start working with him.
And then the last signee was Zeke Quinlan, a 6'7 forward from Portland. Versatile enough to play inside and around the basket, but he also runs the floor, can shoot it a little bit. Was twice the MVP of the state tournament in the state of Oregon. How many different positions can he come in and play?
Well, I think when you look at him and Jared, you're going to see different bodies immediately. Zeke walks in at 6'7 and 218 pounds right now. He went and played for our buddy Nick Weaver down in Arizona in that prep school this past summer or this past season, and they raved about him daily. You know, he's just a bigger type body. When you walk in, you go, man, that's a player. And he's, you know, family, great people, and he's just, I think, again, he can contribute right away at that four spot, kind of be the guy to come in and replace what we lost in Zach there, can shoot it and do those things. But I'm extremely excited to work him and Keljan at that four spot because I think we've got some versatility there, and I expect him to contribute a lot as the season wears on.
And you and I were talking yesterday at a Bobcat Club event just casually about the upcoming season. You add Devin Kirby back into the mix, and you look at the guys you've recruited, 6'7", 6'5", 6'5", 6'9", 6'5", 6'5". This team has some length all of a sudden.
And DK's the longest of them all.
Right.
You know?
How much of an asset could length be for this team?
Well, I thought there was three things that I'll publicly say that hurt us last year. And one was shooting, one was size. But when I say size, for me, it's more length. And then the third thing was I thought we had to improve that with this year's group, our basketball IQ. And we add length, we add some toughness, we add some guys that won a lot where they came from. And then, you know, we had that, you know, DK marinating for the year. And, you know, you think back to DK's freshman year. You know, I can think of three quick baskets where, you know, that ball comes off the rim late. Tyler took a shot late to end of half, and it's coming off the rim. And DK didn't really even jump that high, but he's so long, he's right at the rim and tips it in. And we walk away with the basket. He catches it well. He's a very good passer. I'm expecting DK to really come in and give us some good minutes in kind of an oddball position because, you know, DK is a legit 6'11". And we're hit the weight room hard. He's got his legs healthy. We took the pins out of his knees and stuff like that. He's not a five, he's not a four, and he's not a three, but you could see him at all three of those positions at times. And his ability to pass, his ability to score, his basketball mind is really good. You know, it will take him some time after sitting out a year to adjust back to that, but that's just a minor thing. So again, I'm excited to get DK back out here. You know, we were possibly going to redshirt him his freshman year, and he ended up kind of being in a numbers game where we played him, and then we redshirted him a sophomore year. And so we're at where we thought we would be with him. But I think DK can give us some things. I'm excited and can just do some things, because as you travel with us, boy, you look back in the bus, he's on about six seats out there when he's stretched out. You know, he covers so much area. And I think that's something that'll really help us, because, you know, when you looked at our team last year and we went Connor and Sam at the five, we kind of threw the same pitch. And if we can mix some things up and get some different things from Sam because of this, and we can do this and that, we can all start to throw some different pitches at people, and instead of being so predictable. And I thought we got predictable last year.
And I know with Devontae Klein's leaving, that leaves one open scholarship. Mm-hmm. I know you guys are kind of beating the bushes a little bit, looking around. What are your priorities with that spot? Or are you just looking for the best available talent?
I have my assistants daily present somebody. I think we have to change our mindset a little bit as fans of college basketball. If you didn't have your team set as literally as 3, 4, 5 years ago by June 1, you were like lacking. There's a person becoming available daily right now that can help us. And we're certainly involved with some kids right now that could help us. And so we're chasing a lot of things. We have a priority of what we want to do. But having said that, if something's presented and we couldn't get this certain young man any other time, we're going to take it. But there's some kids that have caught my attention and certainly are high on our list of what we're looking at. But we're not close yet to getting anything done. We're still in the fill out process, but it's kind of fun. You know, 2 years ago on August 8th, I think we, somewhere around 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th August, we got Kelgen. And I think 2 or 3, 4 days later, Montana got a coup from Fullerton. And you start looking at those two guys that both started, you know, 65 games last year for their respective programs. When you add them up, you can add pretty good players in August in this league. And so we're looking to see if we can add again a guy that can come in and help us.
You mentioned it a little bit earlier that you evaluate the season that has gone past and all aspects of the program to begin your summer preparations and all of that. With the summer workouts about set to get going, what's been on your mind with the assessment of the program and when you took stock of last year?
The show ain't long enough, Jay. You know, you take it personal. You know, you go back and you know, we're sitting there basically January 1, and you look at things, and you know, we start out 4-0 in the league, and we're doing some things. But, you know, you and I have talked about this and stuff. There were some things that were starting to concern me even before of what we weren't able to do. And I guess the biggest way you could sum it up was we couldn't make a lot of adjustments. Now, to the credit of the guys, they kept fighting and giving us fantastic effort and never quit. And that was very much appreciated and things like that. But when you go back, you know, one thing that I think you have to be really good at is you have to be able to look yourself in the mirror and tell yourself the truth. And you've got to analyze it, and you've got to look at it. You got to, you know, be around some friends to throw some things, because you can, it's a lonely feeling at times being a head coach. And, you know, you beg for information to make better decisions. You beg for things to show more so you can make a decision, a better decision and stuff like that. And you find yourself thirsty and hungry to gain information. And I spent a lot of time around some other head coaches that I would consider Hall of Famers. And, you know, and all of a sudden you looked at, and they went through the same type of year. And you start to ask them questions and stuff, and you truly find out that as a head coach, you're a lot of times you're along for the ride more than you are steering the boat. And so we've analyzed that, and we've talked about it. I've had countless hours of meetings on this about what we've got to do. The players, which tore me up, you know, all came into a man and said, you know, coach, I'm sorry, I let you down. I didn't know it wasn't their fault. It was my fault. But it sure makes you feel good when people are in the boat with you. You know, you even come to me and was sheepish around me, acting like it was your fault, you know, and it's fun when your friends feel that way. But ultimately, when you're the head coach, it falls on you. And so we may, you know, we've made some things. We're attacking things different, you know, and doing some things. And, you know, when you go from 7 to 14 to 16, you're less likely to make changes because you're headed in the right direction. So when something doesn't, you know, and it ain't like we won two games or three games. We just had a bad 5 weeks in league play there that turned our season because it was setting up. And so you start to look at those things and you look at everything and you think, God, with this decision, did that trip it that way? Did that? But ultimately what you've got to do is you've got to go back and look at your 27 years in the business and go, okay, this is what we've got to build on and go on. And we've looked at it, we've analyzed, we've got 6 things that we think we've got to do better. We've got to challenge our guys better. I think when we look back, we had 19 shots to win games last year and we made one of them. Now you go 19, but I'm talking about we may have had 2 in one game to win a shot and we missed the first and rebounded it and missed the second. We had 19. We made one of them. Made it at Northern Arizona in game 2 of league play, and that's the only game-winning shot we made. So you got to have the luck cards fall your way too. You know, we had the flu hit our team like I'd never seen it hit us before, and we were, you know, going into the week home game against Montana. We had nobody practicing. I had to shut practice because we only had 4 or 5 guys a day practicing, as you saw. And so you go through those things. So they say those things make you tougher. I know it's a long answer, but there was more paper cuts than one big gouge. And we go to work, and it's been a long off season already. I'm anxious to get these guys back because I'm tired of talking about it, and I'm ready to move forward.
I know, as you mentioned, the summer workouts are about to begin. As you get these guys in the gym and back on the floor, what are the top priorities for these guys? I know that a lot of it is individual development, but some of it is team development.
Yep.
How do you balance those things as you take stock of what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks?
I think you go week by week, but what we're doing this year is since we have 6 new guys coming in, we've got them coming in 10 to 12 days before the veterans come back. We want to spend some one-on-one time with these new kids. You know, when Harry and the veterans and Tyler and Sam and those guys walk back in with new guys, they can be intimidating because, you know, those guys have started games and stuff like that. So we wanted as a staff to get around these guys for a couple weeks by ourselves. And so we did that, and we're getting those guys in. They'll go through physicals, and then Wilcox will get their hands on them. We'll start eating right and doing some things and start to try to mold some things one-on-one with these guys and start to set a tone of how we do something. The other thing that's got to be key, and we've talked about this, is, you know, Tyler and Harry get a lot of attention nationally from our program. They've got to come in and be our hardest workers. Sam's got to come in and, you know, be back in the shape that he was his sophomore year, so he's the player he was. You know, and Kelgen's got to attack and finish the layups that he got, and he's got to and finish those, and all these little things have got to go. So we've got a little bit of a burr under our saddle with some new blood coming in. That's kind of makes it very exciting for our staff. You know, we're patiently waiting, but man, as I said 1,000 times already, can't wait for these guys to get here.
And then last thing I want to ask you about, the conference is in the process of working on a 20-game league schedule. Mm-hmm. North Dakota leaving the Big Sky puts the conference back to 11 teams. Sounds like it'll be a true double round robin, get a true conference champion. How do you and the rest of the coaches around the league feel about that?
I was heavily, you know, slanted towards wanting to do a 20-game schedule. You know, the person that I talk to the most on it is Leon. You know, he and I are in this thing of 100% that we need to play a 20 league game schedule, you know, not to take us in a boring thing, but when you're a basketball coach, some of your biggest rivalries and some of your best attended games are games against teams that also are a football rival. And I think it's pretty obvious that Eastern Washington is a football rival for us. We didn't get them here this year. I think Idaho was a rival of our football team. We didn't, our fans didn't get to see them. And, you know, if you just look at it in those games, we get 500-600 more people when those teams come to town, because there's a hate of them in football. There's a hate of them in basketball, and let's all come together and beat them anytime in any sport we can. So, now our fans aren't going, well, we don't see them this year. And I thought truly the biggest injustice of our league was our last four games last year were against teams that we saw one time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I apologized to Weber State coach, slips my mind.
Randy Ray.
I apologized to him because that young man scores 46 points on us, and I hadn't seen him, and we already had to have our votes in for first team all conference, and I hadn't seen him. And it's like, you know, I would have voted him player of the year after that game. And, you know, so now we're sitting here and you know, we've got True. You know, Weber's coming to town. You know, Eastern's coming to town. You know, obviously Montana's coming to town. You know, Idaho's coming to town. You know, everybody is coming to town, and we're playing those guys. And you know, it was setting up last year that the conference championship could be decided by a team that didn't have to play at the other team's place. And I'm not sure that's a great way to decide a conference champion. So now it's going to be truly decided the right way. And I think it also gives us another home game against what the term I use is a like-like, which, you know, now we have another home game to play, and I think that's great, and stuff like that. So I'm a big fan of it. They're having some problems with it right now because of 11 teams are in it. But I think our schedule, we do start conference play on December 29th. We do know that. I'm very appreciative of Leon. He's invested himself in the basketball side to try to make sure this schedule's going. There's four or five ADs in our league that I think are driving that really helped our league. Ron at the conference office does a good job too. So I think they're trying to figure it out, but there'll be some changes. But ultimately, what it looks like is going to happen, Jay, is there's going to be 10 weeks of league play and there's going to be two games a week. So there's no more off week. And that's something we've tried to dictate in our scheduling, is not to make sure we're not in fatigue, because we're going to go 2.5 straight months of two games a week in league play. And we all know how much more intense league games are.
Well, it'll be November before we know it. Summer workouts get going pretty quickly. The guys, as you mentioned, will be back kind of incrementally over the next few weeks, and it'll be fun to follow the guys. Coach, appreciate your time.
Jay, great being on the show. It's been great getting around the state and seeing the fans in their hometowns. That's very enjoyable. Appreciate Bobcat Nation. I know a lot of people listen to these podcasts, and it feels good when we go around the state and they connect with us because they've listened to the podcast, and we appreciate their drives they make, the support they do. And trust me, Bobcat basketball is going to be back on top here real quick, and we're going to bust our butts this summer, and we appreciate all those fans do for us and their support.
Again, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, now available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Also, stay engaged and interactive with us. You can follow the basketball program on Twitter at MSU Bobcats MBB. You can follow me on Twitter at MSU Bobcats Voice. I'm Jay Sanderson. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Bobcat Insider. Be sure to stay up to date with all things Montana State Athletics by visiting MSUBobcats.com and by following the Cats on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram using the handle MSU Bobcats. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.